From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Matson. Good luck, class of 2022, and congratulations, Matson scholarship recipients.
Ulacan, also known as hooligan or candlefish, is a small smelt known in Tlingit as sock. They recently returned to the Upper Lynn Canal, marking a celebration of spring. The nutrient-rich fish is essential for subsistence culture and marine life. As KHNS's Corinne Smith reports, a long-term research study is tracking the fish's populations across southeast Alaska to better understand and protect the species.
Meredith Pokar walks across the mudflats at the mouth of the Chilkoot River, headed to the water. There are some signs of spring, with shorebirds circling and the sun warming through a light layer of fog. But the Ulacan run, known as sock and Tlingit, candlefish or hooligan, are largely missing.
Yeah, it's a little disconcerting that this is the second year in a row that we haven't seen a run materialize on the Chilkoot River. A few days ago, we saw a small school of fish move in, and there's a lot of activity, and it looked like, you know, there's going to be a bunch more fish that came behind them, and we just didn't see them.
Pokart is here every day before and during the spring run from mid-April to mid-May. She's the lead researcher with the Chilkoot Indian Association's Regional Monitoring Project for the fish population. The first telltale sign of the spring run is the sound of the gulls and seabirds overhead and the seals and sea lions and sometimes orcas in the water. Another method is gathering DNA.
There's currently no fish in the Chilkoot River, but we'll still take samples and see if, you know, maybe some came in last night and spawned, or maybe there's some DNA around that we can still pick up from the samples.
Pokard fills two large bottles with water from the estuary. Those samples will go to a lab in Oregon to analyze the environmental DNA, engage fish populations, ecology, and distribution. The research project launched in 2010 after an alert went out along the West Coast that the Ulacan populations were in steep decline. They were labeled endangered in the waters off of Washington, Oregon, and California. It's not only a spring food source for Tlingit communities, but also important for medicinal, cultural, and social well-being. Longtime Haines resident Philip Jackson described what the spring harvest was like on the Chilkoot River when he was growing up on a recent morning with KHNS's History Talk.
We'd used to go up to Clockwan, you know, he had a big old travel hall, and he'd get the elders and all that, you know, and they'd come down, and they used to spend a whole day with us, and they'd be singing and dancing, you know, and them dipping their crackers into a pot, you know, and get the meat out of there and eat it, or dip it in the oil and eat that, you know, with crab pilot bread. It was always so much fun, you know, and hearing the elders talking and Tlingit and telling jokes and giggling and laughing was the utmost for me.
No Ulacan in the Chilkoot River isn't necessarily a bad sign. When and where the small smelt fish run from year to year can vary quite a bit. Pokart says there is a run in the Chilkoot River this year. Dozens of residents were out with nets over the weekend harvesting Ulacan for oil and smoking. A spring run was spotted in Skagway, too. Reuben Cash is the environmental coordinator with the Skagway Traditional Council.
Starting on May 1st, we went from, you know, a couple of hundred gulls down at the Tyre River in Dyea to several thousand. We saw sea lions coming, cruising up the inlet, heading that way. I guess there was a humpback whale in the inlet. So lots of activity.
Cash is also collecting water samples for DNA analysis in the Tyah and Skagway rivers as part of the regional initiative.
I've heard reports that the way that the runs will usually work is there will be kind of some scouts that will go up before the main bulk of the fish will arrive. And however they're able to communicate it with the rest of the colony of fish, if the scouts are able to successfully find a place, then the fish will enter the river and the run will kind of increase from there.
He says the cruise ship season may also have impacted the runs.
And because they have an aversion to noise, they really don't like loud things. We've seen that in some other rivers around Southeast when there's a lot of noise activity. The fish will just switch rivers. So my thought is that perhaps the scouts were coming up, checking out the Skagway River, and then activity from the tourist season just got to be too intense, and so they abandoned the Skagway and perhaps went to the Taya, or they may have just turned around altogether up here. It's hard to say until we see numbers come back from the lab.
Results from the DNA sampling will help tell the story later this summer. Haines-based researcher Meredith Pokart will be analyzing results from the area rivers and the Unik River near Ketchikan and comparing observations with communities in British Columbia. And hopefully this year, they'll have a better understanding of this important fish species. In Haines, I'm Corinne Smith.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. 907-747-3287.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Statewide support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by Satellite Technical Services, authorized distributor for the ACR Bivy Stick, a small two-way satellite communicator. Dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
Ulican or hooligan have been declared threatened in the lower 48, where they once had strong runs as far south as Northern California. I got a chance to sit down on the phone with Meredith Pokart. I asked her if Alaska hooligan stocks were in trouble too.
Well, we had no data. The cultural knowledge of what tribal members had seen over the years was enough to raise concern that we wanted to kind of have a more in-depth study on what the annual spawning population actually was.
Right, and they're the ones who are the end users at this point for the most part.
Yep.
But on the other hand, from an ecological point of view, they are a foundational forage fish. So is there some concern that this could have a ripple effect throughout the whole ecosystem if Ulican essentially disappear?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, seabirds, marine mammals, and salmon return, and like everything kind of follows the hooligan back, it seems. And especially the Stoa sea lions in Southeast Alaska, there's been studies that have been done that Ulican provides this really vital, high energy, high caloric content food source right before the sea lions give birth. And then they don't eat for a month or two, I believe, while they're nursing their young. And you'll notice that the hooligan run, especially in Southeast Alaska, happens sequentially moving north. And so we'll have the hooligan run in southern Southeast, like on the Unik River, happens in mid-March. And then as you move north, the runs continue to kind of move north as you go up and become later and later. If all Ulican spawning happened all at the same time, marine mammals would be forced to choose locations to forage. And instead, with the sequential spawning that happens as you move north, then you can kind of can hit it in multiple different locations and follow that food source north.
I see. So predators would do that. They would follow the Ulican as they headed north at a time when the Ulican are the first fish to show up in the year, I guess.
Yeah.
And that was important for the native peoples who lived along the coast. That was the first good food source they had as winter began to wane.
Yeah, I mean, they're also known as a salvation fish. As the name states, they saved many, many people from starvation. By the time March or April comes around, your winter food supplies are pretty well depleted. And when the Ulican are spawning, it's a salvation. It means that you will make it. You've made it to spring.
And then a foundation for the economy, too, of a lot of those folk. who could then trade it and bring it inland on the aforementioned grease trails.
Yeah, definitely.
So super important for the tribes who lived where the Yulacon came in to spawn. And how different are the places where they spawn now? Have they been essentially sort of crashing from the south to the north? Or have they been just going to different rivers? Or is it just sort of a matter of them going away for a while and then maybe cyclically coming back?
Well, we don't know. We don't have enough data to be able to say that Alaska populations have crashed or have been severely depleted. Hooligan they're a very sensitive species, but that said, they're very sensitive, but they're also, they can be opportunistic with where they spawn. And so unlike salmon that are, you know, more tied to that, their natal stream that they, you know, emerged from, hooligan are not as tied to that natal stream. They can more choose a river that suits their environmental conditions within a region. And so that's why we started monitoring on one river, but understanding the population structure forced us to need to take a broader approach to our monitoring method. And now we monitor up to, you know, sometimes 10 different rivers within a region, just so you can get that full snapshot. Because a decline in one river doesn't necessarily mean a decline in the overall population. It could just be moving to a different river to spawn.
And that's where your project that monitors genetic material found in the water comes into play. Can you describe how that works?
Right now we're taking just a 1 liter water sample from various different rivers across the region and across Alaska now. We're trying to expand our monitoring. Within that 1 liter water sample, we filter it down and capture all of the cellular material and all of that DNA of everything that's in that river. All of that DNA gets captured on a filter, and then we do a process called PCR, and through that process we put a Yulacon specific primer in, and that will match just Yulacon DNA that is found within that sample. And so based on the quantity of Yulacon DNA that we identify within the sample, then we can get a population estimate that way. So obviously, if there's more Yulacon DNA particles within the sample, there'll be, you know, that's a higher population. Lower Yulacon DNA would mean a lower population. So we correlated that method with a kind of a tried and true marker capture method, and had really great high correlation between our marker capture population estimate and our eDNA concentration.
I see. You were able to test your method by taking physical samples and then comparing your results, and they came out very close.
Yeah, yep. You know, you can do, there's other questions you can ask with eDNA, like with the Yulacon project, we're asking, you know, about one specific species and just getting population data on that specific species. You put different primers in, different species primers in, and get data on different species that are associated with those runs. And so you can do that similarly with other fish species and other locations. I think it has a lot of utility. And I think more and more people are coming on board with the use of eDNA for monitoring and for management.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.